All financial advice provided on this show is for entertainment and educational purposes only. The financial ideas and strategies discussed are only provided as a starting point for a conversation about money matters. With regard to your particular investments and financial strategies, consult your financial planner, CPA, or investment professional. All your financial decisions are yours and yours alone to make and subsequently are solely your responsibility. The information that is supplied through the context of the radio program and any repurposing of its content by the host or network is a combination and collection of solid financial investment understanding, opinion, and comments. This network, show, and its host are not liable for financial strategies, outcomes that you employ in any manner that result in any kind of loss. Shares of corporate sponsors may be the subject of buy or sell recommendations in Jay Taylor's newsletter in accordance with Jay's objective opinion.
Welcome to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with your host, Jay Taylor. This hour will help investors fix issues and achieve personal gain. Now, here's your host, Jay Taylor.
Welcome to Turning Hard Times into Good Times. I am your host, Jay Taylor, and I'm speaking to you from New York City on this, the 28th day of August, 2018. Before I talk to you about today's show, let me remind you that I am the editor of Jay Taylor's Gold, Energy, and Tech Stocks, and that you can subscribe to my letter by going to miningstocks.com, miningstocks.com, or you can call our office here in New York City during normal work hours, 718-457-1426, 718-457-1426. Would also like to encourage you to consider subscribing to Chen Lin's letter by going to chenpicks.com, chenpicks.com. Chen has done exceptionally well as an investor, having turned $5,400 into $2.5 million over a 10-year period. And now he shares his ideas with his subscribers. And better yet, today he's going to be with us during the second segment to share a couple of his biotech ideas and a couple of his energy stocks that he likes a lot with us as well. I should also just mention that it's OliverMSA.com, OliverMSA.com. Going to be with me again is Michael Oliver, and goodness sakes, he's been so helpful to us. Just to write that address down too, OliverMSA.com. I always talk about it every week, but just make a special note because Michael deserves the same kind of attention. So I do want to thank all of you for listening to this show and making one of the more popular shows in the Voice America Business Channel. Also want to invite you to keep your questions, criticisms, comments, whatever they are, to questionsfortaylor@gmail.com, questions, the number four, taylor@gmail.com. I also want to thank our sponsors for making this show economically viable. Today's sponsors, RN Resources, Bonterra Resources, Genesis Metals Corp., Great Bear Resources, Klondike Gold, and Novo Resources. And I might just mention that last week about this time when I was talking to you about Great Bear Resources, the stock rose, it was selling at about 50 cents. It's $1.40 before the show began today. So in 1 week, it's actually it got above $1.50. So in 1 week, and that's in U.S. money, in 1 week it more than tripled. These are the kind of explosive runs you can get when companies come through with impressive drill intercepts. Klondike Gold will be talking to Peter Talman next week, and I think they have similar potential with their Yukon project. Novo Resources, of course, the same thing. I'm very bullish on the junior sector. There have been millions of dollars put into this sector. Drill holes put down. It takes a long time from exploration until results come. But now the capital that's been plowed into the ground the last few years, we're starting to see some results, and some of them are downright exciting. So I hope that you'll consider subscribing to my letter. We get lots of great ideas, and some of them we'll share with you here on the show. I've titled today's show, Long-Term Stocks and Gold Beat Long-Term Stocks and Bonds. David McElveny, Chen Lin, and as I said, Michael Oliver will be with me in just a moment or two. David will be second during the second half of today's show, and Chen Lin the second segment. You may not be aware of the fact that if you had a portfolio containing 75% stocks and 25% gold over the last 50 years, it would have performed substantially better than if you had a portfolio comprised of 75% stocks and 25% bonds. But that indeed is the truth, as we'll learn from David McElveny. He'll provide some ideas as to why that has happened and why it might be why it might make a lot of sense if you really understand the nature of gold. Specifically, just the numbers, more specifically, over the last 50 years, a portfolio of invest $1,000 50 years ago, 75% in stocks and 25% in bonds, that $1,000 would have grown to $93,000. But if you had put 75% of that $1,000 in stocks and 25% in gold, that $1,000 would have grown to $125,000 over that same time period. And even better, the portfolio with gold would have been less risky. Fewer ups and downs. That's risk defined as volatility of annual returns. So we'll be talking to David McElvaney about that in the second half of today's show. Ask him about what are some of the ways that investors can take advantage of that that long-term dynamic. Also, Chen Lin will be with me in just a couple of minutes here after we talk to Michael. Chen will talk to us about two of his favorite biotech stocks, and that's where he's really made a lot of money in the last few years in the biotech sector. Also, he's done very well in the energy stocks and quite well also sometimes in the gold share sector. So Chen will be with us, but right now, Michael Oliver. Thanks for joining me, Michael.
Hi, Jay.
Always good to have you with us. Now, last week seemed like kind of a pivotal, maybe turning point for gold. Today I see gold is getting whacked pretty hard. I haven't looked at it in the last half hour or so, but it was down pretty hard today. What's your take on gold right now?
I think everything is transitioning, and gold too. And I think the transition began in some markets over the last 2 weeks. That would be gold, for example, and dollar index. With gold shooting up as much as 4.5% off its low intra-week low to the high of this week, and the dollar index dropping sharply over the last couple weeks from an area I think is resistance, and I think both of them are making a transitional turn of their intermediate trends. The major trend on gold is up, the major trend on dollar is down, and so therefore the dollar rally we've seen over the last several months, which I think has peaked, is just an intermediate counter-trend rally. And the same with the large drop in gold from well over 1,300 down to where we've been recently. And I think that they're turning. Now, I think this is also true with a lot of markets. The S&P, for example, which I'm really focused on right now, which has probably got people more fatigued in the watching process than any market, the drop that occurred in February, we measure markets by, different timescales of momentum trend. Everything breathes, short-term, intermediate, long-term. And sometimes these swings aren't in sync with each other. A long-term trend could be positive, and you'll have a counter-trend move that may last several months, for example. Well, so we measure via different timescales. Well, in the case of the S&P in February, we had a sell signal at 2790. That was about 60, 70 points off the traded high of January. It collapsed within 6 days to 2532 from that sell signal. Now, that was an intermediate trend sell signal. It stopped exactly at a level that it had stopped at in the Brexit sell-off and the post-Trump sell-off, which is its 40-week moving average, or for on our oscillators, a zero line. It stopped there. Now, there was so much distance between the point where intermediate trend signals a sell and where it got down to a level that needed to hold on long-term momentum that by the time you got to the long-term momentum number, you were pretty much exhausted on near-term and intermediate-term charts. You were oversold. So it held. So the problem then, in terms of turning the S&P into a longer-term bear, was you exhausted yourself just getting down to the key structure. That's changed. We've come back. It's taken. We had about a six-day drop in February that collapsed at hundreds of points. It's taken us 7 months to regain all that. So consider that, days versus months. And finally made a new high. Oh, boy, we're now, a percent above the January high. Okay. It's non-confirmed on all momentum indicators, and the pending structure to break it back down on an intermediate basis starting in a week in September are numbers literally around where you're trading now, down to about a percent below where you're trading now. So there's a minefield right below the market. Now, the difference this time between now and the February break is the long-term breakage numbers are only 3.5% below where you break the intermediate trend. So unlike in February when there was a huge distance between breakage of one and then breakage of the other, almost 10% or more, this time it's only 3.5%. So the minefields are very close together this time. And therefore, I think you've got to be watching the S&P because any intermediate downturn that we can signal and we issue them in our reports. All it has to do is sneeze 3.5 more percent beyond the point of breakage, and it's going to trigger the big stuff, in which case you probably got your top.
And it was the
big stuff, yeah. This is stuff that goes, this trend support structure I'm talking about, or long-term momentum, goes all the way back to late 2016, and it's been used so many times, it's ridiculous. If you saw the momentum chart, you would say, oh, my God, you know, this is highly dangerous. You can't break that level again. If you ever do, you're over. But I think all of this is occurring in various markets simultaneously, where the transition points are occurring. Some of them have already begun. I think the dollar down and gold back to the upside. And no, it's not going to be a straight shot. But I think you're going to see more evidence of it as we get into next month, because that's when the monthly numbers take over, and I think you're going to see the trend change will be a little more apparent. Upside in gold, upside in silver, and downside in the dollar, and likely downside in the S&P. So I think we're in transition right now. It wouldn't surprise me between now and first of next month, which is, what, Tuesday, week from now, that you get some downside in the S&P, some kind of sell-off, but nothing significant. It's when you get into September that the numbers get really pregnant for these reversals. And so, I think it'll be largely concerted. You know, it'll be happening in many markets, both different directions, you know.
Mm-hmm. So, well, I'll have to wait and see. One of the things that I really like about your work, Michael, is it helps to put in perspective these, you know, we tend to be influenced so strongly by what's happening in the near term, and we don't see the world from 30,000 feet up. We see it from, you know, right where we're at. And so today, for example, I'm seeing a cash gold down 1160 right now. It's, you know, just a whisker under 1200. And, you know, it was looking very good early today, but lo and behold. But that's the way markets are, and what you seem to do and what's so helpful to me is put these short-term things in perspective from the longer term. The structure, you know, longer term, shorter term, these counter-trend rallies and so on and so forth, very helpful to me. And anything else you'd like to add this today yet before we go to the break?
No, I even see it in the grains, which we fumbled on that one, I have to admit. We saw the grains as upside earlier this year, and then wheat, in fact, has gone up. But corn and beans went down, and it was the tariff ambush that occurred in May when the Trump tariffs against China, because China's biggest consumer of soybeans in the world. And he says, nah, you know, they stuck a tariff on it to retaliate against his tariffs. And so the soybean market really got whacked, and it's down, in my opinion, at what's called theoretical zero, meaning commodities aren't going to go to zero. So each commodity has a level over time, and it gradually rises because of the decay in the currency units, obviously you measure it by, where a certain price level is just, it's just not going to go below there. It'll labor there, but it's telling you, I've had it. And I think around $8 beans is around theoretical zero for soybeans. Each commodity has its own sort of ground floor that you can beat it back down there, but you just aren't going to take it lower because it's not going to go to zero. And I think we're about there in soybeans. I think the monthly shift that we're going to see in the grains next month is also going to become apparent, particularly in corn and beans, back to the upside.
Okay. I know you've been particularly bullish on the grains, on the agricultural commodities. With 30 seconds left here, Michael, do you still see... Do you see an end to the decline in copper and oil and possibly a resumption of a bull market in those two markets?
Yeah, the oil I'm a little mixed on. I kind of think that it could ratchet itself lower between now and the end of the year. I think it had a glorious first 2 years off its low after it went from $26 to $75. I mean, not many commodities had that percent recovery. So I'm sort of ambivalent on oil right now. Copper may have had the correction we wanted at $3.16, which was slightly off the highs back in May, June. We said, a sharp correction's coming, probably into the 250 area. It got to 255. Right now it's 273.
Okay.
So that might have been the corrective low at copper.
Still, generally, still bullish on commodities in general. All right. Very good.
Despite the fumble in the grains, the tariff news and all that, I think they can overcome that and regain themselves. But I think it's transition month is September. We used a phrase, the sumo wrestler pivot throw. you've seen a sumo wrestler pivot throw the other guy. I think that's going to happen in a lot of markets during September.
Another thing that's fun about reading your stuff, Michael, is you do use some picturesque language from time to time, and that's to make otherwise boring numbers look a little more interesting. Thank you so much. It's Oliver MSA, folks. Oliver MSA. Learn more about Michael's work and sign up for his excellent newsletter. We do have to go to break. Thanks again, Michael, for being with us.
Thank you.
Folks, don't go away, because we'll be right back with my friend Chen Lin. He'll have some ideas about some biotech, a couple of biotech favorites and a couple of energy favorites. So don't go away. We'll be right back with Chen Lin.
Think you've seen everything there is to see in online television? Let us surprise you. Visit voiceamerica.tv today for sports, health, business, and more on demand 24/7.
A gold rush has begun. Recently, three of the largest gold mining companies announced strategic acquisitions in the Yukon territories. Ahead of them was a group who had already consolidated the key claims covering the historic Klondike Gold Rush into one company, aptly named Klondike Gold Corp. Led by a team of accomplished geoscientists, the company is steadily advancing exploration to reveal the rich source of all that gold. The hunt for the next major discovery is well underway, and Klondike Gold's shareholders are strategically positioned. Stay ahead of the majors and follow KlondikeGoldCorp.com.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
You're listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with your host, Jay Taylor. If you have a question or comment about today's show, Jay would love to hear from you at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. You can also send an email to questionsfortaylor@gmail.com. That's questions, the number 4, taylor@gmail.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back to Turning Hard Times to Good Times. I am your host, Jay Taylor, and I'm really pleased to have with me once again my friend, Chen Lin. And Chen is, hasn't been on the show for a while, but we used to have him on. We should have him on more often. It's all a matter of time constraints, but actually he's had an excellent track record. He was a candidate for a degree, an advanced degree, a PhD at Harvard, at Princeton. But he was making so much money investing that he decided to put that on the back track, and he's done so well, and we've learned to know each other. He's just a great idea with a great person with a lot of great ideas that are very, very interesting, and he works extremely hard, and he does well for his subscribers. So it's chenpicks.com. Just again, if you want to take that address down and contact Chen and consider subscribing. Chen, you've done very well in various segments of the equity markets. I know, diverse segments, actually. But recently, you've done extremely well with the biotech. I think the biotechs over the last 2-3 years or so, you've done very, very well, maybe 4 or 5 years. Can you comment on a couple of your favorites? I know a couple that you've encouraged me to own. First, Sorrento Therapeutics, selling at about $5.50 today. They are an immuno-oncology story, and I think one of their products is CAR-T, which I believe is one name or one concept that people need to watch and pay some attention to. Talk to us about Sorrento Therapeutics. What is the company, what are they up to, and what should people be looking for in terms of share price drivers?
Hi, thank you. Thank you, Jay. Nice to be back. First on Sorrento, the goal is to cure cancer. Okay, mm-hmm. So they are trying a very experimental procedure for CAR-T, which has a great success last year. You know, the company like Juno, like Kai, they've all been taking over around $10 billion. And Sorrento's market cap about $500 million. So that's that's your, you know, upside. They are doing the trial right now. They are in the trial. So results could come in, come out anytime from now to the end of the year. Depends on how do they want to release it. In general, CAR T, the first 10, 20 patients can tell whether this is successful or not. Has been the case for Juno and has been the case for Kite.
Mm-hmm.
So I couldn't say more about that. That's very, very important, and then it can propel the stock up tenfold or more. And also,
okay,
they also invest in another company for Celerity, and then they are potentially going IPO this year. So that's another catalyst.
Mm-hmm. All right. They also are involved in some non-opioid painkillers, I believe, or pain products, pain management products, right, Chen?
Yeah, that's right. But that's not their core, you know, right now.
That's not their core business.
They already got approved, right? Mm-hmm. They're approved by the FDA. I think they either sell it to, you know, because their balance sheet is weak, right? They can sell it, or they find a partner to do it, or whatever. But it's not a major thing.
Mm-hmm.
It definitely offers values to the stock.
Chen, you have some allergies or something bothering you there a little bit, I guess. If you want to take a break and get a glass of water, that would be okay.
Oh, no, I'm fine. I'm just
okay. All right.
Flying,
all right.
Visiting a project, so I'm okay.
Okay, very good. Okay, so another one that you like is Oncosec Medical, $1.43, O-N-C-S is a symbol. What can you tell us? They're also involved in cancer immunology or immunotherapy, I guess, right?
Yeah, exactly. This is kind of stock I like, or person I like. Right now, stock is at the 75 million market cap, right?
Uh-huh.
You look at the chart a couple of months ago, when they initially announced the results, stock was trading at more than double the current price at 150 million market cap. So when they announced the preliminary results, stock was trading at $3. Right now, it's trading at $1.40. They will have final results coming out in a month or two, you know, one to 3 months, just to get myself a little bit. Very soon, they will come out with the results. And then they have a similar product. It's called Armo, right? If you look at in the 2-3 months ago, Eli Lilly spent $1.5 billion and bought Armo. Right, Armo is very similar to theirs. It's called IL-10 or interleukin-10, and then theirs IL-12. So very similar product was taken over by Eli Lilly for $1.5 billion. So if they are successful, easily another company can spend $500 million, $1 billion, right?
Mm-hmm.
To them, because that company is a bit more advanced, so probably cost more, but the same idea. So That's a, you know, very good risk reward for $75 million stock. I mean, there's no difference from now and 3-4 months ago when the stock was trading at $3.
Mm-hmm. Chen, I'm sort of thinking that maybe some people who might be a little less risk averse might, especially if there's some really short term catalyst here, might want to consider buying options if they're available. I know that the Sorrento has some options. You could buy call options on Sorrento, right? What about Oncosec? Perhaps not, huh?
It's already a dollar something, so it's quite low. You can potentially buy the option, but that you have to cover relatively long period of time.
My
experience is if you know when it's a catalyst, you can buy option. You don't know exactly sure because the data can come out from 1 to 3 months, you don't know exactly sure at the time.
Yeah,
Just own the stock. So that's just my experience, but, you know.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I guess that's right. Of course, if everybody knows the date it's coming out, then the price of the options will be going up too. So, anyway, those are a couple of your favorite biotechs, and I think, you know, I mean, these are really high risk, high return stories, aren't they? I mean.
Exactly. You know, I decided very well in the past few years in biotech. You know, I have proven if you are successful, you can get thousands of percent back, back, right? It's not just that 10 back, it's more, many, many more than 10 back. So if you're successful, but of course, there will be losers along the way too.
Yeah, I mean, they are very volatile. These stocks can go up and down based on rumors or whatever's whatever the market thinks, because the stakes are so high. They tend to become overvalued and then undervalued, and back and forth they go. And then finally, you've had enough of these that you've been patient with, but you watch them very carefully and you let your subscribers know on an ongoing basis, you know, the real big catalyst and when they should be alert to those catalysts. So I think that's a very valuable service that you provide. And you also, though, have done
very well with
energy stocks. And Valera Energy is one that you like a lot. It trades in Toronto under the symbol VLE, and you can buy it in the U.S. under the symbol PNWRF. I saw it trading at $2.80 in U.S. money a little while ago. What can you tell us about that? That's a company with oil and gas operations, I guess, in Turkey, is it? Natural gas in Turkey?
Exactly. Natural gas in Turkey recently has been hammered because of the Turkey currency crisis. Okay, mm-hmm. I got a lot of questions from my subscriber, from my friend. They've been asking me about what's going on with them. It's Turkey first. It's very likely be first major fracking success in Europe, period, in the history, you know, for so many years. They have a very successful testing of first well. Now they're just about to move the rig to do the second. You know, to do a second well. Mm-hmm. And the Turkey financial crisis scared a lot of investors. And
yes.
I've been advising my subscriber it's a good time to buy, you know, to buy again, you know, using this dip. I personally have been buying. I mean, I can tell you I have been buying today as well. So because mm-hmm. today, Lira had your weekend again, someone was mm-hmm. selling, someone was scared. But I'm not. I can tell you why. Because first, it's a major fracking in Turkey. You're talking about tens of trillions of cubic feet of natural gas worth billions mm-hmm. and billions of dollars. The market cap of Valera is a couple hundred million. It's laughable. And also, but Turkey lacking any infrastructure, lacking the technology to do any fracking. So the risk for company in the country to nationalize is almost nothing. Mm-hmm. I jokingly with a friend, I was telling if what's the chances that field getting nationalized? Probably a few years, maybe or 5 to 10 years, when mm-hmm. they start generating good cash flow, maybe the country will look at it to nationalize. But at that time, Valero will not be an independent company. I can pretty much sure say that mm-hmm. a major company deal with them. Mm-hmm. It's well, upward, everything is possible. So the risk I see is a civil war in Turkey. Okay, so mm-hmm. unless Turkey get into civil war, this is a very good asset, and they're going to do testing without coming out in a few days. So that's for the first well testing, test production, and then the second well will be start drilling at the end of the Q3. So, mm-hmm. and then results will be Q4, maybe Q1, right? So it's coming pretty quick. Oh, I'm sorry, I'll take it back. At the later this year, they start drilling later this year. Results will be Q4, likely some result in Q4, and then major results in Q1 of next year.
Year, okay. All right, Chen, with just about a minute left, Transatlantic Petroleum also has some projects in Turkey, I believe, oil and gas projects. TAT is a symbol in the U.S. That's a Texas-based the management, the company's in Texas, but they're operating in Turkey with oil and gas. TAT is a symbol, $1.72. What do you like about that one?
Well, as I said very early on, many months ago, I think that this is a plan to take over by its a majority shareholder, more than 50%, Malone Mitchell. They have been just moving along. I think he's going to take it private. They have been a lot of delays. I think one of this, there seems to be multiple bids on the company. So for the CEO and chairman to take it over, they probably has to overbid everybody, right? So this process is taking a little bit longer, but I'm very optimistic. And has a great asset in Turkey, same basin. They have a lot of acreage. They also have other in Eastern Europe. I once asked the CEO what's their favorite project. He's thinking, I think Bulgaria has a very good prospect. So there's a lot of things coming, and we should find out very soon, hopefully in a few days.
All right, excellent, Chen. Well, thank you so much for spending your time with us. giving us some of these ideas. And again, it's chenpicks.com, chenpicks.com. Folks, go there to learn more about Chen and sign up for his letter. It's he'll send you information when he has any time that he picks up important information concerning some of his favorites, the ones he's really watching closely. He'll send a missive out to you to let you know about it. It's a very good service. Thank you, Chen, so much for being with us, and we'll look to do it again sometime in the near future.
Thank you, Jake. Glad to be back.
Thank you very much. Well, folks, we do have to go to break, but don't go away, because David McElvenny will be with us to discuss where he thinks we are in the credit cycle and maybe give us some ideas as to why gold is better than bonds in a diversified portfolio. So don't go away. We'll be right back with David McElvenny.
Become our friend on Facebook. Post your thoughts about our shows and network on our timeline. Visit Facebook.com/Voice America.
Noble Resources Corp. trades on the OTCQX under the symbol NSRPF and on the TSX Venture Exchange under NVO. Its flagship assets are located in the Karratha region of Western Australia, where they are currently drilling and trenching their Perdies Reward Project. In addition, Noble has partnered with Sumitomo Mining Corporation to advance its Beaton's Creek Gold Project toward production. With over $70 million in cash and strong shareholder support from the likes of Kirkland Lake Gold, Noble is well on its way to establishing itself as one of the top junior explorers and developers in Australia.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
You're listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with your host, Jay Taylor. If you have a question or comment about today's show, Jay would love to hear from you at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. You can also send an email to questionsfortaylor@gmail.com. That's questions, the number 4, taylor@gmail.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back to Turning Hard Times into Good Times. I am your host, Jay Taylor, and I'm really pleased to have with me once again David McElvenny. David is the president of the McElvenny Financial Companies, McElvenny Wealth Management, and ICA. It's a precious metals brokerage firm. Yeah, David has a very impressive academic background, having a degree from Biola University. That's an associate member of Keble College, Oxford University, and he worked with Morgan Stanley as well before going to work with his father's firm. Don McElvenny started the McElvenny business many years ago. I remember, and I'm much closer to Don McElvenny's age than I am to David, so I remember many years ago when I was a young man listening to Don McElvenny at a show in New York and reading his newsletter from time to time. So I'm really was really pleased to hear that that David was picking up for his father when his father retired recently. I've known David for quite a while. I think front and center above all, I think I know David well enough to say that he is a God-fearing man who believes in Creator God, who rules over all human activities and does so out of his love for us. Now, many people have told me over the years to keep my personal faith out of discussion about economics and markets, but my thinking has always been that you cannot separate one's worldview from human behavior. And the way I see it, there are basically two major religions in the United States. There is Christianity on the one hand, and what I would say is an anti-Christianity or liberalism on the other. And we Americans are facing those two conflicting worldviews, I think, like never before in my lifetime. And I think that they are having, at least liberalism is having an impact on our political and economic landscape like never before in my view. Well, anyway, theological issues are certainly beyond the scope of our discussion today because of limitations of time, we'll need to stay focused on some of the services that David's firm has available to help individuals through the storms that might lie ahead. McElvenny Wealth Management and ICA, the precious metals firm, when I asked David about both of the services of both of those companies. Decades of Keynesian liberal economics have set a path of socialist economic destruction in front of us, and so what we want to ask David today is for help in protecting our wealth against the perils that we are starting to face now. I believe very firmly we're about to face, thanks to decades of irresponsible monetary creation. I should mention before we say hello to Dave that you can learn more about his firm at McIlvaney.com. That's McIlvaney.com. David, thank you so much for joining me again today.
Jake, great to be back with you.
Always good to have you. You know, I've been familiar with your weekly podcast, and I should tell our listeners that you really want to check this out. It's about an hour long. They're excellent in covering major developments in the markets as well as domestic political and geopolitical events. David, what is the objective of the podcast, and how can our listeners avail themselves to it?
Twofold objective with the podcast. One is continuing education for everyone in our community, this team here in Colorado. And by extension, the second purpose is to invite others into that learning process. So as we're uncovering things and asking questions and seeking answers and constantly searching for the truth, we're inviting listeners to come along for the ride with that. So whether it's book discussions with a particular author or talking to a politician or a central banker or our own internal discussions, just me and a colleague, that's what we're trying to figure out, is what makes the world work and how we should be positioning accordingly as investors.
You know, I get an email every week advising me of the topic and that you're, and then the link to the email. How can people get that? How can they receive their email, your emails, alert them to the topics of your podcasts?
Yeah, you know, that's easy. If you go to McIlvaney Weekly Commentary, you mentioned our main site, McIlvaney.com. Mm-hmm. McIlvaney Weekly Commentary has a subscribe function on it. And you can listen to this week's commentary. I've been doing it we're now in our 11th year of podcasting every week.
It's excellent. And I wasn't aware that you have another, I guess it's on YouTube, actually. Tori Aguilar, a senior advisor in your firm, told me about it. You have something called the Golden Rule Radio that I guess it focuses primarily on the markets, on the precious metals markets. And I listened to it last week, and I thought it was really excellent. It was about like a 10-minute overview of the markets and some things to look at. It's a technical discussion from a technical perspective as well as fundamentals. So the objective of that, I guess, is just to keep people in touch with the precious metals markets and help them keep a perspective of it, because I was just talking to our first guest a little while ago. You know, it's so easy to, you know, we miss the market from 30,000 feet up, and we're looking at what we're experiencing right now today. Gold is down, you know, $10 or so, and it looks, you know, it's discouraging if you don't take a longer-term perspective. But what is the objective, then, of the Golden Rule shows, if you could just explain that?
Yeah, our whole organization is geared towards product innovation and ongoing education. We want to empower investors to wisely engage with the world, whether it's in, you know, fixed income, whether it's in commodities, whether it's in equities, gold, of course. So education is certainly a part of it. And product innovation is something that we've been doing for a long, long time. We're the first company to put physical precious metals into an IRA going back to the mid-1980s and have come up with a number of new formats for people to invest in the metals through the years. So education and product innovation drive us. Those are two pillars of who we are and why we exist.
Yeah, an IRA for gold or silver as well, I suppose, right?
That's right.
Okay. You know, I read somewhere in your company's literature that over the past 50 years, an investment allocation, 75% to stocks, 25% to gold bullion, would have performed much better than 75% in stocks and 25% in bonds. Specifically, the statistics were $1,000 invested 50 years ago would have turned into $93,000 if you went the conventional route, which is 75% stocks, 25% in bonds. But lo and behold, if you had that 25% in gold bullion, that $1,000 would have gotten you to $125,000. How do you explain that?
Yeah, the big issue is volatility. And when you have a high percentage allocated to stocks, if you have a market downturn, if you take a loss in your equity portfolio, it can take a long time to recover. When you have a cushion like a 25% allocation to gold, what you're doing is lowering total volatility and increasing total returns over time. So you don't have the same significant drawdowns that the normal equity portfolio would have. So, you know, over time, that's why you end up with a higher rate of return when you're combining equities and bullion. My dad ran those numbers for Merrill Lynch back in the 1970s, and we wanted to check our math and see if anything had changed from the 70s to present, and we did the same research all over again this last year, and lo and behold, that 75-25% split. If growth is important to you, you can take away some of the downside by having an allocation to gold bullion.
David, is gold more negatively or less strongly correlated with stocks than bonds?
Correct. I mean, one of the things that drives the bond market and the stock market at the same time is the cost of capital. So, you know, as interest rates are coming down, bond prices are going up. Lo and behold, as interest rates are coming down, if you're doing a discounted cash flow modeling for equities, you have a justification for a higher price. So when the cost of capital is coming down, you end up with a higher correlation between stocks and bonds. Gold ends up being a better hedge than a fixed income portfolio would offer.
Right. So then, have you found in the statistics you just ran less volatility, less risk in terms of volatility or change from year to year in returns on the portfolio for the gold portfolio, the one with gold as opposed to the one with bonds?
That's correct. That's precisely right.
Oh, so less risky. And so, you know, if you're in a retirement position and you need to take some money out from time to time, if you're sitting all with stocks and bonds and you have a 2008, 2009 kind of event, all of a sudden you might be sitting with half your value gone.
And and I think one of the things that we consider is that harvesting profits, whether it's from a cryptocurrency position or an equity portfolio that's done very well, the NASDAQ gets above 8,000, routinely cutting that back, you know, a farmer plants seed, he grows the crop, cuts it back, and plants again. And that process of taking profits, I think, is so important and reallocating. And to me, when you're building wealth, gold is one of those foundational pieces that represents a long-term asset that you want to accumulate over years. And one of the things that we've tried to innovate there is ways in which you can invest in gold that become easier and easier. And we've just launched a brand new product that I think that does that very well.
I've known of you for so many years. I've known of you as, you know, your father as an honest money, gold, silver firm. You mentioned your innovative products and so forth. You don't deal with stocks, I think, very much at all, do you?
Our wealth management company does. We deal with everything under the sun. Yep. So we're very well exposed to the analysis and the allocation process. We're not in that sense a one-trick pony. If it's in the financial universe, we're very interested in it. What gives us a particular interest in the program we just launched called Vaulted is really a generational issue. When we look at the generations of investors that we've helped, tens of thousands of people, billions of dollars placed into the metals market through the years, we started in 1972, we see a generational communication issue, and that is parents and grandparents who may have a proclivity to own gold don't necessarily know how to articulate it, and quite frankly, in the last 10, 15 years, something has shifted dramatically. The format in which people give and receive information and communicate is beginning to change. In fact, the way in which they prefer in a younger generation to even transact business is predominantly digital. So Vaulted is a program that we launched to be able to address the needs of the next generation of gold investors. We saw a need in the market for a more transparent and straightforward way to approach gold investing, especially for a younger generation who may be newer to the market or to gold. And I think it's a great offering that allows for one generation to kind of pass the baton to the next with the values that they find important to them, but, you know, with a format that makes more sense to a 21st century crowd.
Yeah, for sure. I can't imagine too many young people. My son, for example, is in his early 30s, loading up the truck and taking some silver home and putting it in a closet or in the barn or someplace. So, so your Vaulted product, which you mentioned, I did open an account there. I believe it's for small investors as well as larger investors. I mean, I think you can open an account for as little as $10. I think I saw I opened mine with $50. It was very easy. I'm certainly not a very IT savvy person, but I think it took me less than 10 minutes perhaps to open it. Talk to us a little bit about the Vaulted Gold product. What makes it unique, and why do you think it provides something that others haven't yet provided in this space?
There are, there are other products out there that have either a different product mix or a pricing strata or an interface that we've found to be incredibly challenging to use. So what we were trying to do is bring the best mix of product pricing and interface so that the ease of use when you're transacting, buying and selling is there. I mean, we want you to feel like you're holding, when you're holding your smartphone, actually holding gold there on your phone. So how much gold do you want to be able to transport with you? How much gold do you want on your phone? You can go from cash to gold in seconds with one touch to get either to or from the gold market. And so we developed Vaulted to be an easy-to-use, web-based application to really reinvent the way people invest in gold.
All right. So if I want to go, I can go online, open a Vaulted account, and buy gold at whatever the market price is at that point in time, I guess, with a credit card or with, how do I do it?
Vaultedapp.com is the domain, Vaultedapp.com, and you can do it any way that you want. The best way, if you're considering it as a savings alternative, and that's really where I see this being really filling a void. Savers don't want to be stuck in a game where they have no control. And I think we're seeing devaluation become more and more common. I mean, look at how flexible politicians are with their exchange rates and the tools that they use to create economic stimulus, and now all the talk of trade conflict and whatnot. Currencies are smack dab in the middle of this. So the fact that people have to look at their savings more critically and say, what is a stable way to hold my savings? You link this account to your savings account or checking account, and ACH funds either in or out, and it's very easy to manage your liquidity. One of the critiques I've had over 50 years, we've been in the business near almost 50 years, is it's cumbersome to transact with gold. I have to send product in. I have to wait for it to arrive. How long does the post office take to get it there? This takes away all of the encumbrance and, again, allows you to treat a gold holding as if it's a savings alternative.
You know, there has also been talk about, you know, we had bailouts in 2008, 2009. There's talk now of bail-ins where banks may simply decide that they need a certain amount of your deposit to keep solvent. And they apparently have the legal right. Actually, you are an unsecured lender when you put your money in the bank. So it would seem to me to make some sense to take your savings out of the financial sector and put it into something like your Vaulted product, I would think, outside of the banking system. Cost of storage, David, and cost of buying and selling gold.
Right. You're right in line with GLD on the cost of storage, 40 basis points. And, you know, we have some of the lowest fees in the industry. And all that is shared up front. You go through that webpage, vaultedapp.com, and it gives you every detail that you would want, including the fact that the gold that the Royal Canadian Mint uses is certified conflict-free. And I think this is a key value that we embraced through the development process, transparency. Gold investment opportunities have been criticized, whether it's from hidden fees or taxes, and I think Vaulted addresses all of these issues by providing a completely transparent investment process. So, you know, if you're looking at the current spot price of gold, add 1.8%, and that's your cost for the kilo bars. And yeah, we've eliminated the middleman. Ordinarily, there's a middleman. You have spot plus the wholesale price plus a retail. On top of that, we've been able to compress all of that down with our direct relationship with the Royal Canadian Mint.
And the gold that you buy, is it allocated? Is it your gold? Is there some way of identifying your specific gold?
Absolutely. Okay. And I think that's one of the key things is when we look at gold and other programs, it's very difficult to get a hold of or take delivery of. It's not in a format that you would want to. And kilo bars are one of those things that whether it's Asia or Europe or the U.S., readily available, very desirable. And you're talking about a non-pooled product, an allocated product. So you can buy any portion of a bar. And then once you've completed the purchase of an entire bar weight, 32.15 ounces, then you're assigned that serial number. So every purchase is associated with a serial number, and then you're assigned that specific serial number if you own the entire bar.
Recently we had a guest on that has a product in which you can lease your gold. You still own it. it's leased, and this firm does its due diligence, and it's actually insured by Lloyd's of London. You can lease your gold, and I guess maybe perhaps get 2% or something like that on it. You're not going to get rich on it, but at least your gold is earning something. That's a lot of times the argument that's put out against owning gold. Well, it doesn't give you any return. Well, it saves its value. We know over long periods of time, and fiat currency becomes worthless ultimately. But the reason I just mentioned that, is it possible to have physical gold transferred from the vaulted account? So if I wanted to have physical gold transferred to, say, invest with this other company, not invest, but to lease my gold out for a return from another firm and then have it sent back to my vaulted account, is that possible?
Absolutely not. We would not want to touch leased gold with a 10-foot pole, and I'll tell you why. When you deal with counterparty concerns and what happens in the context of financial stress and strain, a leased gold program is beautiful for the income that it gives you under normal circumstances. But the reason that you own gold is for those instances in which things are abnormal. When the stock and bond market or currency markets are in chaos, you saw this in 2008 and 2009, everybody wants to know who owns what. Who owns what and who has access to it? So all of a sudden, counterparty risk and whether or not collateral is actually accessible and to whom becomes a real issue. Now, if you want to stand in line and spend thousands of dollars with New York City lawyers to figure out if you get your gold back after leasing it, then you be my guest. But for me, the priority of owning gold is owning something that is a financial asset, but as we talked about earlier, is not in the banking system and is only at the periphery of the financial system, ready to be deployed into the financial system at a moment's notice. So I like the idea of treating gold as a savings alternative, as a currency alternative, and in the right time and space, putting it to work. Savings do that for you when there's value propositions in front of me that make the most sense. But I'll tell you what, Jay, if things are getting cheap, that means that there is stress and strain in the financial markets. We have such a financialized, over-leveraged system that the idea that you can, when you want to liquidate your gold to buy other assets, be able to do that in that kind of a leased arrangement, but I wouldn't risk that, because I think the best upside in gold is actually the translation from one asset class to the other, going from gold, your savings deposit, into a value asset, whether it's stocks, land, or what have you. So
sure.
I definitely clearly have a bias there and would not participate in that kind of a program for all the merits that it may have.
Yeah. Okay. Well, just with a couple of minutes left, David, I think your firm also engages in a gold-silver strategy where you swap into back and forth between the two metals. Is that handled? Is that in the wealth management, or what part of your business handles that?
Yeah. So ICA, International Collectors ICA. Associates, okay. is our precious metals brokerage company.
Right.
And there you're dealing with guys and gals with 20, 30 years experience in the market, and trading the ratios and looking at premium plays and things like that allow you to compound ounces. And that's one of the reasons why, you know, I love vaulted. Vaulted's convenient way to save, and you can do it with as little as $10 in the account, which makes it great for kids and grandkids and things like that. But if you want a more sophisticated approach, not a static position in gold, but actually want to toggle back and forth between gold and silver or from platinum to palladium or what have you, then tapping into the kind of advisors that you have in our precious metals brokerage firm, it's invaluable. I mean, it pays itself over and over and over again. So, I mean, I love the new product that we're doing, Vaulted. It's not a cure-all. It's not meant to be all things to all people. It is meant to be a savings alternative. It is meant to be a non-bank alternative. And so I think it does those things very well. It does those things very well. But if you're looking for more counsel and consultation and expertise in ways of growing ounces within a precious metals portfolio over time, can't think of a better group of people to be in touch with.
All right, and you do have that personal contact that people can actually talk to your advisors there, which is, I think, special these days when everything seems to be so automated and non-personalized. So I think that's definitely a plus that you're offering. David, with just about a minute left, where do you think we're at in the credit cycle now? I mean, we've had a stock market now that's hit new highs. It seems like it's never going to end. It seems as though Mr. Trump is probably going to put, has seemingly been putting pressure on the Fed chairman. to ease the money supply and pump money in there to keep the party going. Where do we sit right now?
I think we're at the final stretch of the credit cycle. My colleague Doug Noland, who writes the Credit Bubble Bulletin and manages on our wealth management platform, the Tactical Short, I think would agree with me that we have gone about as far as creativity can take you in terms of central bank interventions, an extension of a business cycle which has gone far beyond clearly anything that perhaps I've imagined or he's imagined. But you begin to run out of ammunition, so to say. And you know, we're at a dangerous place where asset values are extended, where apathy and complacency is equally extended, where people have borrowed record amounts on loans from their brokerage firms to buy even more of what they consider to be a guaranteed win in the stock market. It's that kind of over-exuberance that defines a market top. Yeah. And, you know, now with, you know, whether it's price to earnings or price to free cash flow or what have you, you can look at a variety of metrics, and we are at the most expensive or second most expensive market values in all of stock market history.
All right, we'll have to leave it go at that, Dave. We're out of time. It always goes so fast. So much more to ask you about. Perhaps another time, if you can come back, we'd love to have you to talk more about some of the economic issues, the global geopolitical issues and so forth that are in play. But people can listen every week to your podcast and catch all of that as well. Thank you, David, for being with us, and all the best to you and your firm.
Thank you. And if anyone's curious about the Vaulted program, just vaultedapp.com is a great way to discover more.
Excellent. All right, folks. Well, that is all the time we have. Next week, Richard Mayberry will be with me, Peter Talman, the CEO of Klondike Gold, and I expect Michael Oliver will be with me once again as well. Until then, goodbye and God's blessings to you.
Thank you again for listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with Jay Taylor. Please join us again next Tuesday at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel.
Bonterra Resources, an advanced exploration company, is aggressively expanding its high-grade Gladiator gold deposit in Quebec, Canada. Over the last 12 months, Bonterra has raised over $60 million and has attracted strategic investors Eric Sprott, Kirkland Lake Gold, and New York-based Vanek Gold Fund. Bonterra is focused on updating its 43-101 resource in the second half of 2018 and will incorporate up to an additional 100,000 meters of drilling, where the dimensions of the Gladiator deposit have been expanded to date nearly 500%. Bonterra trades in Canada under the symbol BTR and in the U.S. under the symbol BONXF.
Often referred to as one of the best teams in junior gold exploration, having discovered a 5 million ounce gold mine and sold a second company amidst discovery, the management behind Orin Resources now has a world-class exploration portfolio within Canada and Peru. Projects that give the company one of the largest direct pipelines for major discoveries globally, with one of the deepest technical teams to explore them. Entering into its third year of aggressive pursuit, Orin is expecting results from two of their major projects throughout the rest of this year. For the latest, head to orinresources.com and subscribe.